partner. We got a little chaos in your coffee. It's Chaos and Coffee with the rock god of podcasting, Charles McFall.
That's right. Thank you, Mike. I am Charles McFall, the rock god of podcasting. That's Mike Wooder, producer at large over at Giant Size Team Up Network and producer for you. You can get voiceover work and production done by Mike if you go to Mike, M-I-K-E, at the Mike, M-I-C.com. Mike at the Mike.com. Check him out. Tons of great work. He does amazing stuff, and he's done multiple intros for Chaos and Coffee that I will be cycling through because I just love them that much. So, yeah, like we said, this is Chaos and Coffee. We're about to get into the news of the world, which is a chaos, while we sip on our coffee. Here we go. Today's breaking story. This happened today, Monday, previous to my recording at about 10 a.m. this morning. The Supreme Court strikes down Texas abortion access law. You can actually get this off of CNN.com. Of course, I will have the links in my show notes. Now, here's the thing. Texas seems to only want guns and guns. I don't know what else there is. There's a huge anti-immigration movement in Texas. From what I can understand from my people that are there, there's a bit of an anti-gay feel to Texas because they're really hating the Supreme Court's ruling on marriage. Now, they've been going after abortion for the last couple of years. Now, federal law states that abortion is legal and it should be safe and there's guidelines, so on and so forth. Well, Texas has done a thinly veiled attempt to essentially try to legally shut down abortion in the state of Texas. And by that, they put up two laws, or one, maybe it's one law with two restrictions in it. Ultimately, there's two things to deal with here, okay? And it would seriously restrict access to getting an abortion. I'm not saying I'm for abortions. I'm actually a little bit of pro-life, but what I mean by pro-life is that I think life is valuable. That means I'm not going to tell you what to do with your body, okay? I believe that everything works the way it's supposed to work, and if you choose to do what you choose to do, that's not my life. That's not my choice. It's your choice. Maybe I'm a little bit of a libertarian that way. I'm not sure where all the politics fall in the way I feel about things. I value human life starting with you in my face, saying, hey, I don't understand your life. I don't understand what it takes to make your decisions. Therefore, I can't make them for you. Okay, so with all that being said, here's just the report of what is coming out of Washington today. And a dramatic ruling, the Supreme Court on Monday threw out a Texas abortion access law and a victory to supporters of abortion rights who argued it would have shuttered all but a handful of clinics in the state. Now, here's why I actually love this ruling and support it. And I'm going to keep reading this article from CNN.com very shortly here. Because it's, when I just said I'm pro-life, meaning I'm going to start with the life that's in front of me and say you're a human being, I respect that you have your own life and that you have to deal with it. These lawmakers are not doing that. These lawmakers said, screw you, federal government. Screw you, Supreme Court. We don't like what you did, so we're going to try to control this population. And so they tried to skirt the law and basically make it inaccessible to legally have an abortion. So we're going to get into that right here. The 5-3 ruling is the most significant decision from the Supreme Court on abortion in two decades and could serve to deter other states from passing the so-called clinic shutdown laws. And joining with the liberal justices, perennial swing vote Justice Anthony Kennedy helped deliver a victory to abortion rights activists and signaled the court's majority in their favor. Whatever. This thing is worded a little weird, or maybe I'm just trying to think too much while I'm reading. So let me skip to some other things where it talks about. Okay, here's the breakdown. This is a quote from Justice Breyer. There was no significant health-related problems that the new law helped to cure, Breyer wrote. We agree with the district court that the surgical center requirement, like the admitting privileges requirement, provides few, if any, health benefits for women, poses a substantial obstacle to women seeking abortions, and constitutes an undue burden on their constitutional right to do so. So what that means is that the two things that Texas was trying to pass is you had to be in a surgical center in a hospital to do an abortion. instead of a clinic setting, instead of what most abortion clinics are, which are miniature surgery rooms, okay? They still have to follow safety guidelines. They still have to follow whatever the health guidelines are in these clinics. But what this new law says is you have to book a surgical center in a hospital. Let me just tell you, from being a 10-year paramedic and from still dealing with people in my family who are dealing with surgeries and health problems, getting a surgery done in a surgical center is a huge deal. It's super busy, limited access. Emergency surgeries bump it all the time because it's attached to a hospital with an ER. And you have to have surgical nurses, you have to have surgical staff, you have to have specialized everything. And it's just such a huge cost. Not even the logistics of it, where it's very, very difficult to get scheduled. I had a knee surgery scheduled. Now, I ended up having it. It got bumped a little bit late. Same with my wife. My wife had a surgery to stop having children, and she got her tubes tied or whatever. And when we got there on time, her surgery got bumped back and bumped back. And you know, we ultimately got in and out as we needed to. But there's a chance that you can have those non-emergency surgeries bumped. Hospitals don't like to be tied to abortions. I mean, you consider it. I am not downplaying abortion at all, okay? I'm not oversimplifying this. I'm trying to make this where you can understand and discuss it around the water cooler or the dinner table in an easy fashion. So there's surgery where they have to save your life, right? You've seen the open heart surgeries recreated on TV, or if you watch the documentary channels and all that stuff. Then you have the non-emergency surgeries, like mine, where I had severed a muscle in my knee, and they needed to go back in and put a new muscle in and do everything they have to do with that. Those all require surgical centers because there's a chance things can go really, really wrong, and you have to be admitted to the hospital. And typically, it's just how that thing's done. Most doctors don't have their own surgical places inside their clinic. They just don't. Because it's a lot easier to let the hospital foot the bill. That also, so when we get down to abortion, if I'm understanding how this works typically, is abortion is lumped in with cosmetic surgery. When you do cosmetic surgery, you go to the doctor's office, and they probably have a little surgical suite inside their office that's sterile and clean and safe. And they, you know, do your little tuck or lift or whatever. From what I'm reading here and what I'm in, I've not done a ton of research, but this is just news reporting and some commentary and a little bit of coffee on the side. But what I understand is that basically abortion, for laws and rules and regulations, is lumped in with cosmetic surgery. You can go to an abortion clinic, get the abortion done right there. From what I understand, from a medical standpoint, safe, easy, done. Okay, well, this rule saying that you have to have a surgical center puts you way back in line. You know what everybody was screaming about with government health care and death panels, and you're going to have to wait forever to get seen by a doctor? No, that's exactly what the surgery centers are, is you have to wait, you have to get in line, and whatever's more important to you on a scale of whatever, 1 to 5, 1 to 10, however they rank the importance in that hospital, you fall in that line. And if somebody more important comes in, heart attack, well, in this case, my knee surgery over your baby, you know, you get bumped. There's that. Then the other problem that they had, the Texas law had, was admitting privileges. Now, that is a sticky widget right there. Okay, so here's what admitting privileges are in a nutshell. A doctor has to be told by a hospital, yes, we will let you put patients in this hospital. Most doctors don't go through that. Most doctors partner with somebody who has admitting privileges, or there's other ways around it. But a lot of doctors, you know, especially, okay, if you work in the hospital, you automatically have admitting privileges. If you work outside the hospital, you have to go through whatever that hospital requires you to do to say, yes, you are an admitting doctor. There's a finite amount of admitting privileged doctors you can have. Because they all get to admit patients if you have rooms, so you can't oversaturate the possible market that's there. So all these clinicians, right, I don't know clinicians being a doctor who works in a clinic versus a doctor who works in an ER or a doctor who works in cardiology or family practice, okay? I don't know what level of training they had to get to be an abortion doctor. I have no idea. They could be a doctor with a specialty in abortion. I don't know. I have no idea how to do it. But they're definitely, as an abortion doctor, you're not going through all the hoops and everything to get admitting privileges. And a hospital can pretty much tell a doctor, no, we're not going to let you admit here. We're not going to let you be a part of our program because they can't. So these are two major requirements that would shut down a lot of the clinics in Texas. So here's another by Justice Ginsburg. When a state severely limits access to safe and legal procedures, women in desperate circumstances may resort to unlicensed rogue practitioners. I don't really want to read that word. It's some French word phrase. At great risk to their health and safety, she wrote. So basically what the Supreme Court came down and said was, as a state, you're going to harm your population with these laws by having these ridiculous, well, I said ridiculous. They didn't say ridiculous. I'm adding, by adding these ridiculous requirements, you're going to make it very dangerous for them to get abortions. You're going to hurt your economy in your own state. And here's what happened in the 80s. We tried to outlaw abortions and women were getting them anyway. And horrible, horrible things were happening. Not always, but that's when I first heard about the back alley procedures, right? The rogue doctors, because they believed they were trying to help. So there's going to be a lot of fallout politically here. There's going to be a bunch of stuff going on with that. You're going to see a lot of platforms and things going on there, platforming by people going, the right wing is probably going to talk about how horrible this is. And it's another step. And this is why you have to elect a Republican as president to change this stuff out. And then you're going to have the left. Already I see quotes by Hillary Clinton and President Obama celebrating the decision. There's your talking points for today. The Supreme Court strikes down Texas abortion access law. All right, on to the next story. I got another Supreme Court story that probably is going to get buried by the abortion story, but this one I think is just as important for you to know about. The Bob McDonnell Supreme Court ruling makes convicting politicians of corruption almost impossible. And this is something you would think would be a lot easier. You'd think it'd be easy to go, hey, that politician took money, took bribes. It's obvious he was playing favorites and he should be serving the people. Let me explain something to everybody. No politician serves the people. Maybe they start out that way. Maybe. Maybe they start out with good intentions. Maybe. But to be honest with you, I believe that every politician ultimately serves their own purpose because I believe every human being serves their own purpose. I go out to help others be awesome, sure. But I do that because it makes me feel good, right? It makes me feel good to help others do great things or be helpful to people. But it's self-preservation. Seriously, you will, in a crunch, do what it takes to save your own life, to save the life that you know, not just the living, breathing life, but the way of living, the house over your head, the food on your table, the life that you know. You will do what it takes, whether you realize it or not. Now, some of us will choose to override that thought process, right? That instinct, if you will, and we will serve others. We will put ourselves aside. Most politicians in my mind don't do that. They're there for the power because they think if they have the power, they can change the world. Well, if that's the case, then you have to have the power. And come on, when people start throwing money at you and they start trying to wine and dine you, it makes you feel like a rock star. But here's the story. I've done some commentary before even getting the story, but this is from the WashingtonPost.com. Link will also be in my show notes. No one thinks Bob McDonald and his wife Maureen acted nobly in their dealing with a dietary supplement businessman, Johnny Williams. They accepted $175,000 in gifts and donation, Rolexes, Ferrari rides, wedding gifts from Williams, who was relentlessly trying to gain access to the Virginia governor and his wife in hopes of improving the chances of his various businesses succeeding. And yet the Supreme Court unanimously overturned McDonald's conviction on corruption charges Monday. That'd be today. Why? because it's very, very hard to convict politicians on public corruption charges without a smoking gun. And in this case, there wasn't one. And this is the problem with politics as a whole. The engine is busted. And we think by electing new people, by changing the oil, it'll fix everything. No, the wheels have fallen off the car. The engine has locked up and exploded and is sitting in pieces. But we're going to get new windshield wipers because that's going to fix this. There's no smoking gun because they can't prove yet, or at least in the conviction, they did not prove that Williams said, will you do this exact thing if I give you these Ferraris or Rolexes or whatever? And that's the problem. They're treating corruption like murder. I understand in any kind of kill case, okay, homicide, neglectful homicide, murder, manslaughter, I understand there needs to be a high burden of proof because that's serious and it comes with serious weight of consequences. Corruption cannot be treated like murder. Corruption should be way easier to prove. We're going to get into it. Let me get back into the story here. This is what Chief Justice John Roberts says. There is no doubt that this case is distasteful. It may be worse than that, wrote Chief Justice John Roberts in a majority opinion. But our concern is not with tawdry tales of Ferraris, Rolexes, and ball gowns. It is instead with the broader legal implications of the government's boundless interpretation of the federal bribery statute. What Roberts is saying is this. Yes, McDonald and his wife breached the public trust and drastically underperformed the expectations we have for our elected officials. But disappointment and tawdriness aren't illegal. Again, Roberts says, if the court below determines, that means the criminal courts, of course, if the court below determines that there is sufficient evidence for a jury to convict Governor McDonald of committing or agreeing to commit an official act, his case may be set for a new trial. If the court instead determines that the evidence is insufficient, the charges against him must be dismissed. We express no view on that question. So that's what they're saying. No smoking gun, no murder weapon. You have a dead body, right? You have the proof that they were being, it's hard to stick with the murder thing, but that's what they're treating it like. But you have the proof that they were taken out to massive dinners, that they were treated extremely special. In return, they did stuff for Williams. However, you can't, there's no murder weapon. You can't say, I've got the dead body. I've got the crime scene. Everybody saw you go into the building, but I don't have the knife or the gun, so I can't prove that you killed them. I don't have your fingerprints anywhere. So sure, McDonald and his wife accepted all sorts of gifts from Williams, and sure, Williams was trying to curry favor from McDonald to help the dietary supplement he was hawking, but Justice Roberts is asking, what is the thing that McDonald did in exchange for all those gifts that would have made this an obvious example of selling his office to the highest bidder? McDonald has always insisted that there was no quid pro quo tied to Williams' donations, arguing that the things Williams allegedly bought with his largesse, a lunch held at the governor's mansion to benefit his product, contacts shared by McDonald with Williams, etc., were in keeping with what he as governor would do for any Virginia-based company or entrepreneur. I call BS on this one. I say that's crap. So if I'm in Virginia right now as a state resident and I am trying to get my podcast more attention, you're going to host a lunch for me at your mansion with all kind of radio hosts and producers and promoters and managers and people who can get me out there? You're going to do that for me because I voted for you. Because this is in keeping with what he as governor would do for any Virginia-based company and entrepreneur. No, it's not. You're a lying sack of whatever. McDonald, but here's in parentheses, McDonald broke no law in his willingness to accept these gifts either. Now, of course, he was taken out of office. His successor, Terry McAuliffe, I don't know, McAuliffe, Terry, Governor Terry, significantly tightened the gift limits in reaction to the outcry over McDonald. So at the time when he accepted all this stuff, he didn't break any laws. Now they've changed the laws in Virginia to make it harder for government officials to accept gifts. But here's what Justice Roberts wrote. Setting up a meeting, calling another public official, or hosting an event does not, standing alone, qualify as an official act. And that's frustrating. That's very, very frustrating to hear this kind of thing. So I'm going to skip down towards the bottom. This is still from the Washington Post. What the ruling will do is have a potentially profound effect on future cases involving allegations of public corruption against politicians. Because all right, I'm done with the article. You can read it. It's great. It's well written. But I got to move on to the stories. But I want to say one last thing. When you're elected, here's what we hold as our political system. Here's where the break is. We the people want to drive in traffic and honk at people and speed and cut corners because you're in our way. We the people want to go to Burger King or McDonald's or anywhere else and raise hell that we didn't get the one thing we wanted and demand justice and get people fired or at least have them have a bad day. We the people want to go to stores on Black Friday and fight and snatch stuff and just everything's about us all the time. Yet, we the people think that if we elect you into the office, you somehow have to be different than us. That you have to live on a higher plane than we do. And then we the people are shocked and horrified when you turn out to be an actual human being and you do exactly what we do. This applies to churches and especially applies to politicians. I guarantee you, man, the same people expressing outrage at what he did would be the same people that would do it themselves. And I'm very frustrated with the system. I'm very frustrated that the system was set up to allow him to do this. I don't believe politicians should have to work on a higher level. I just believe that there should be a service there to all of your people, a job to do when you step out and do your job. And I don't believe he did his job well. Not when he's serving one person because they're giving him all this stuff. That's, you just didn't do your job good. And so you should get voted out. I think the laws need to be changed to what corruption is and how easy it is to prove it. I can't tell you how many jobs I've had where they said absolutely no accepting of gifts, period. And I was a low-level paramedic making, what was I making at the time? $11 an hour. $11 an hour to save lives and to live away from my family 24 hours at a time. I was making 11 bucks an hour, and my company had a policy that said I could not accept gifts, period. How hard is that for politicians? How hard is that to put in place for the government? What are your thoughts? I would like for you to go out and spread the word and tell me what you think. Go over to facebook.com/chaosandcoffee. And put your thoughts out there. The show will be posted there as soon as it's up and published, which will be in just a few minutes. And of course, you can find us on our home at blogtalkradio.com/chaosandcoffee. But I'd love to discuss your thoughts. I mean, it won't happen on the show. The show is very fast and very, you know, I hit the stores and move on. But definitely the Facebook page is for that. facebook.com/chaosandcoffee. All right, one more story before I get out of here. This one I found really interesting. This one, it's still a little scary. Today apparently is the Monday of scary because we've got the Supreme Court striking down scary laws. Then we got the Supreme Court upholding very loosely written, badly written laws. And now we have the FAA kind of good, kind of bad. I'm not really sure what I think about this. But this is by Paul Bedard on the WashingtonExaminer.com. FAA okays drone journalism starting in August. So new Federal Aviation Administration rules on flying devices opens the doors to newsrooms using drones to cover events, peer into buildings, and capture images like never before, according to the founder of the Drone Journalism Lab at the University of Nebraska. In 60 days, drone journalism will be legally possible in any newsroom in the United States. That's not to say it'll be easy, but it will be legally possible in ways it has never been before, wrote Matt Waite. The long-awaited FAA rules released this week appear easy enough for newsrooms to comply with, he wrote on his blog. The news is reasonably good. There are still challenges, and we haven't even talked about the state and local laws that have been piling up while the FAA lumbered toward today. But the future of drones and journalism is much brighter today than it has ever been, wrote Waite. The new rules are require a test and licensing of drone pilots. They also detail off-limits areas, but for many news events, drone use should be allowed. Limitations include flying directly over humans, and that would include sporting events. But Waite noted that most sporting events are under team rules and news drones are banned anyway. But yeah, that rule. So here's the thing. When you start talking about peering into buildings, but then you have the regulation of not flying over, directly over humans. This is going to be an interesting thing to see what happens. But I can't help but think of tabloids and people like TMZ and the things that happen already where people are ambushed on the sidewalks constantly. Celebrities are ambushed coming out of clubs or, you know, those kind of things. You know, we go back to the mid-90s with Princess Diana dying because of paparazzi and how crazy it was getting with them trying to get a shot and being dangerous. And then I hear this about drones. And I'm not – okay, drones heavy enough, I guess. I honestly haven't held one. I've seen them. You know, there's different kind of drones. A lot of times we hear drones, we think of the military and the big, you know, snake-looking almost. I mean, it's like an evil kind of animal-looking flying wing type of device. But this applies to mostly the drones that you see every day. Not every day, but you see a lot in everyday life if you're around different events. That's the four helicopter blades. In a square, it's like a square device with the round helicopter blades, and it can hold cameras and those kind of things. And they get some amazing photos, and they get some amazing video shots. You can do some great things with them. But a lot of places have banned them indoors for the noise and for whatever reason. But here's my thing. I think one of the reasons that a lot of places like convention centers and sporting events have banned them is not so much for the danger, because I was starting to say earlier, I imagine they are heavy enough that if they fell from a decent height, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 feet up and hit somebody in the head, it could kill them. Yes. But I think they got banned because of the invasion of privacy. What can be caught? The kind of espionage is a weird word for it, but the kind of espionage that can happen just innocently. Somebody just videotapes all this stuff, doesn't realize something they captured in a window or somewhere else, and then it gets out on the internet, and people who know what it is can use it. I don't know, but man, when I hear, I'm 50-50. When I hear the news can use it, I'm like, oh, imagine some of the great shots you can get with this that you can't send a human into, but you can take a flying robot and go in there and get some video and some footage. Sure. But then I flip over to the other 50% of the time going, but what privacy can be invaded? What kind of new horribleness can come with this that we're not imagining? And that's the question I'm going to leave you with today, is just because we can doesn't mean we should. So here's the question. What great things can come of this, but what horrible things can come of this? And maybe we should really, really consider the two before we really move forward with this kind of thing. All right, that's going to be it for today. This is the Monday edition of Chaos and Coffee. I am the Rock God of Podcasting. You can email me at bearcrawling@gmail.com. That's bearcrawling@gmail.com. Of course, I'm on Facebook. We've got the show at Chaos and Coffee on facebook.com/chaosandcoffee. And then you've got me, facebook.com/rockgodofpodcasting. I'm on Twitter at Rock God of Pod. You can follow me there. Check it out. Subscribe right here through iTunes and, of course, on Blog Talk Radio. I'll be back Friday with more headlines from the week. I hope you enjoy your week, and at least you have something great to talk about.